This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Welcome back to the BPOS podcast. Today, I have a very special guest, a good friend of mine, Greg Goodman, founder and CEO of K-Tonic Kombucha. Greg, thanks so much for being here, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to this.
Me too.
Look, to get started, why don't you tell everybody who you are and what you do?
Sure. I started a kombucha company in 2014 after brewing it in my kitchen, and slowly grew in the Austin market and then through Texas, and then now we're on the West Coast, and we're growing a lot. I did that. It was really out of my passion for creating something myself. I've always been a creative person, been a musician for a long time. This was just another example of that. I still have a day job and I do this. But kombucha is something that I've never wanted to do anything that wasn't beneficial in some way, either to me or my family or to others. And kombucha really checks all those boxes because it's a functional beverage.
Right.
And we made a low sugar all tea,
yes,
kombucha, which I think is something that was missing from the market for a long time. And it's really not, that aspect of kombucha making is not really grown. Everyone has turned to, instead of low sugar, fake sugars, and then there a lot of these companies, these bigger companies, are not even making kombucha anymore. So we're really kind of keeping the craft element of kombucha,
yeah,
also continuing to make it healthy. So that's K-Tonic. I moved to Austin from San Antonio with my family in 2008. My wife and I started our family in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. We had our first daughter, Eden, in 2004, had our second child, Meadow, in 2008, mm-hmm, and then had Ezra here in Austin in 2009, and that was our brood, basically, and, you know, grew roots and where we live in Northwest Austin. And having the kids growing up in Austin has just been lovely.
Yeah.
And I also tell the story about the fact that, I'm Jewish. I grew up in East Texas, which was very difficult, for someone who, was told that they were going to go to hell constantly and that I killed Jesus. So I grew up, thinking that I I killed Jesus somehow. And I didn't even remember doing that. And the point of that is starting my family and bringing us to Northwest Austin has been incredible because there is a small but growing Jewish population there in Northwest Hills. And and so my kids have all grown up Jewish and way more Jewish than I ever was. And it really made me proud to be Jewish again because I was, you know, bullied and put down from ignorant people in East Texas. It was a part of Harris County that was adjacent Polk County, which is one of the most, it's like the home of the Klan.
Oh, good gosh.
So this is in, I don't name the city or whatever, but it's, it was, you know, not deep East Texas, but pretty close to it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I moved to Houston to go to high school there, and then I ended up going to college at Trinity in San Antonio.
Okay.
It was just very rewarding for me to have my kids experience Jewish culture, and it really reinstilled that in me. I'm not a religious person at all. This is more of the cultural side of Judaism.
Okay.
And this kind of will lead into something I'm about to bring up, which is really the tragedy that happened to us. I love our culture, and that's what I embrace. I also love that, you know, my wife is Mexican and Chinese, and our kids are in a multi, you know, cultural household, so they can experience that as well. I think it's been wonderful. As we kind of grew our family in that neighborhood, we had some mental health challenges with both my oldest daughter and Eden and Meadow, but in particular, Meadow really started having some challenges when she started turning, you know, 13, and you know, mid through her teenage years, to the point of where there was some self harm. And there was actually, an initial suicide attempt. So we, after...
That was at age 13?
That was actually at age 14.
14.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a tough time for kids, man.
It's a tough time as it is. And I remember being that age. But the landscape is different. Mm-hmm. There's some similarities with, you know, teenagers today and where, you know, our generation was, but there just seems to be a lot of additional pressures that I think are driven like by this, you know, just instant culture, fast-paced culture and things like that.
Yeah.
So, she was definitely struggling. We, you know, immediately got her attention, not just therapy, but through multiple programs through a local children's hospital here.
Okay.
And Meadow was an extremely smart child and became very adept at manipulating people and was telling a lot of people at this particular children's hospital what they wanted to hear so that she could move through the process as quick as possible.
Got it. She learned the system.
She did. She, you know, something in her just changed when she started really, when she really had to face her mental health, in this type of environment.
Can I stop you right there? So what were some of the initial signs that you saw that led you to question her mental health?
Well, there was, you know, the stuff that you can't really ignore. When I say that, you know, before her first suicide attempt,
right,
she was self-harming. So cutting, basically.
Okay.
And when she was doing that, this is something that we have.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Experienced before with our oldest daughter, and I'm getting a little bit like I don't want to make my oldest daughter uncomfortable with this, so need to think about this very carefully.
Sure.
Because she is doing great. Eden is doing wonderfully well, and what she experienced and what Meadow experienced at that stage is very, very common with a lot of teenagers. And I do think that teenage girls dealt with it more than teenage boys, to my understanding. But
when, because I'm not familiar with this at all. So,
oh, really?
I don't. And if I ask a question that you're not comfortable answering, you say I'm not comfortable with that. It's perfectly fine. Oh. But like, okay, so with self-harm and cutting, is it common for it to be like in visible areas, or is it like in hidden places, or?
You're correct. So it's usually, and I don't want to trigger anybody else, but it's like the undersides of places and things like that. So it's not something that is very outwardly evident.
Got it. Okay.
But when it was discovered after, going through what we did, on a, much lower scale, generally speaking, with Eden, we immediately got her into therapy and started talking to a psychiatrist about medication and things like that. So because we already knew the drill with Eden.
Right.
And so from that point, it was just hard to read, like whether we were making progress or not.
Yeah.
Really hard.
Yeah.
My poor wife, who is, a mother, and I say this all the time, that she, as a mother, no one is more affected by this type of stuff than her.
Yeah.
I'm a father, and I love the kids as, more than anything else in my life. Yeah. And so does she, but she carried them. She,
yeah. The there bond was, is was a little different.
Different connection.
Yeah.
Much stronger connection in a lot of ways. So, I was definitely concerned about what this was doing to her second time around, but at the same time, it was almost like we kind of knew the drill a little bit, and Eden had climbed out of this. So with Meadow, there were some aspects of what she was dealing with that were at a different level, like when she attempted.
Right.
She, attempted, and I'll just mention this, the nature of this attempt is that she tried to overdose on Tylenol. Mm. Which apparently was a thing that she probably read about on social media, which is, and I'm trying not to vilify social media.
Sure.
Because I don't think that is A, completely fair, B, tells the entire story. There's a lot more to mental illness with teenagers these days than blaming social media.
Right.
Because I think that is, that's just wrong.
Yeah.
She was on a different level. So we got her checked into Children's Hospital. Mm-hmm. She went through an inpatient program and then a fully outpatient, then a partial outpatient program. Mm-hmm. It was over the course of a few months. Literally at that program, she said everything that I remember going to that because parents participate in part of that program. And I remember she ended up running the program. Like it was like the presentations about the different skills that these kids learn and what they're supposed to take away.
Yeah.
she was interrupting, like, you know, I was get to the point where I was just like, hey, you know, Meadow, let the therapist do her job. And Meadow was like, oh, I know this, you know, like that. And she's like, oh, I know the answer to this. And she would just constantly, you know, and she was making everybody laugh. And it was just like, it was not a great thing for me. You know, I was, it was like a weird mixture of feelings where I was kind of tickled, but also at the same time, a little bit pissed because she's, you know, it's just, she's not getting out of this what she really needs to get out of this. She's not accepting the situation, and she's not going to be, you know, and she told us straight up she wasn't going to use these tools. There's a safety plan that you sign, that she signs at the end of this thing, that she, you know, was supposed to sign to be released. And the therapist at the time, this caused me to talk to them later on about how they dealt with the situation. But the way that she was to be released was to sign the safety plan, and she didn't want to sign it. And we were there, and I'm like, well, you're not leaving if you don't sign it.
Right.
And she's like, okay, I'm going to sign this, but I'm not following any of this. Wow. And her therapist, I looked at her therapist. I'm like, well, what do we do about this situation? She's like, well, she answers all the questions. She knows the skills. And I'm like, well, she clearly doesn't want to use it. And she's, you know, being belligerent about this. Yeah. And so she signed it, you know, with that caveat. We left. She seemed fine for a while. My wife was tireless about the coalition of care that she was getting. I mean, she was talking to two different therapists, talking to the psychiatrist about, you know, maybe a change in her meds and stuff like that. You know, and this has been for months. And Meadow just was not into, she liked her original therapist, and her original therapist was very quick to once found out that through Meadow that she had attempted, she was like, she's out of my care. Like, I cannot. She needs to have a higher level of care than what I can give her. And that was the only therapist that Meadow liked. So, and I know, Mike, that, you know, when we talked about all of this before, that what I really do want to talk about is what I'm about to say and how we've dealt with these things. But we, you know, basically Meadow lost her battle with life. She took her own life on August 12th, 2023. She, at 15, she just turned 15 in June. She was making plans with my wife and I the night before about who she was going to visit, and she needed a ride to go do this and go do that. This is not as clever and smart as she was. This was not premeditated to the point of where she was planning for weeks that this was the day she was going to do it on this day. Now, did she figure out how she was going to do it? Positive. And I'm sure that she was, you know, very careful about that. But I truly believe that she decided to do what she did early that morning.
Using my GI Bill taught me I can do anything. And seeing me graduate taught my daughter she can too. VA benefits cover tuition, housing, and supplies. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
You know, to spare all of the details of that morning, I found her. And I can't articulate any thing more than that was the absolute worst moment of my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't imagine anything worse than that.
No.
And, you know, I definitely needed some help after that. And my whole family gets therapy fairly regularly, which I'm very grateful for. I have to say that for anybody who has experienced that level of trauma, which EMDR is something that, you know, people who are war vets use to help with their acute trauma. EMDR has been an absolute lifesaver for me.
What is EMDR?
I will mess that acronym up.
That's
but
all right.
It is, but I'll explain what it is.
Yeah.
EMDR is a way to take processing out of your short-term memory into your long-term memory. Because what happens when you have an acute trauma, I hope I don't mess this up either. When you have an acute trauma, for protective purposes, it stays in your short-term memory. So if you're, I'm trying to think of, you know, the from a prehistoric standpoint of why this was necessary. If you're attacked by, you know, a mountain lion and you want to stay at the ready, that attack is in your short-term memory.
Gotcha.
And is not getting out of there because okay. you need to be ready for whatever. And
you're
so
on high alert.
Right. So you're and really it's just traumatizing. So I was, you know, obviously very traumatized by that morning. And it really, that type of therapy, the way it processes things, it works. Like, it worked for me.
Wow.
It worked for me, and I'm very grateful that I got the help I got. And just so we can get into this aspect of it, I've never seen a community of people come and rally around us.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. It was my neighbors, my neighborhood, mm-hmm. the Jewish community. The Jewish community were incredible to us. Our friends, our gym friends, you know, they're wonderful.
Yeah.
And a shout out TCS, Dallas County Strength. They're just an amazing community of people.
Yeah.
And it starts with the owner, Travis, but you know, we had incredible support. And so that morning I had a conversation with my wife about, of course, we were, you know, both just beside ourselves and in no state to really have much in the way of a conversation. But yeah. we did talk about how we wanted to receive support. And it was my wife who started really the mindset of us being open about receiving support, about what happened mm-hmm. with Meadow, how it happened, and how, and really what spawned from that is how we can help others, hopefully not not suffer the same fate,
yeah.
but also if God forbid they do, how we can help them navigate through it based upon what we learned.
Yeah.
We know that the way we did things is not the one way to do things, but we decided to be very open and honest about what happened. The one of the worst things that you can do, I think, is not talk about the mental health challenges that are in your family, that are happening with your kids, and especially not talk about suicide and the risk of suicide.
Right.
If you keep those things in because of shame, some sort of shame, the stigma that's behind that, people are going to die. People are going to die. Children are going to die. And I encourage anybody who is going through anything where their kids are, you know, whether it is, I mean, a lot of the mental health stuff, the self-harm, suicidal ideation, they're calling out. They want the help.
Yeah.
They want the help whether they know it or not.
Yep.
And it is up to parents and friends of, you know, friends, the community, et cetera, to be able to, you know, help. I mean, it truly takes a village.
Yeah.
But it starts with the family.
You know, there's a couple things. One, just to kind of backtrack a little bit, I'm trying to remember, you called me and it was about business. You gave me a ring. We hadn't talked in a while. We knew each other from, you know, your early days at K-Tonic, right? And you gave me a call and I I honestly don't remember exactly how the whole conversation went, but I had told you, you know, my world is in a little bit of a turmoil. I just lost my son. And you were like, holy shit. Like, I had no idea. And then you told me about Meadow, which I didn't know about either. And it was, it took a little while for that to sink into me, but it happened pretty quickly that I was like, there's a reason that Greg reached out to me. And it wasn't about, you know, canning product or right. something like that. Like, there's a reason that this happened. Mm. So I bring that up because, you know, when you say it takes a village and you talk about community and, you know, support and understanding and stuff, like, it's monumentally important, like super, super, super important. And when something like this happens, you know, when you lose a child, it's somebody who hasn't lost a child. I mean, they can empathize and sympathize for sure. But I just had a conversation about this with a good friend of mine who lost his son. We were talking today. He said to me, you know, you're the only person in my life that can truly understand what I'm going through right now. So
truth.
Yeah. So there's something there, right? You know, and I don't know what it is, but there's a reason that you reached out, and I'm really glad that you did.
Same.
And on that community note, gym community note, it was my gym, the owner of my gym, that put together the meal train, like right off the bat.
Yeah.
As soon as she heard about Connor, and you know, all these people from CrossFit Lake Travis jumped in, and I had no idea how valuable a simple dinner every night was. I mean, like Rochelle and I don't know if you guys experienced this, but there was no way that we were able to go to the grocery store and shop and make dinner for ourselves. I mean, we were so, you know, you try and figure out what your next steps are and what to do next. You know, dinner is the last thing you're thinking about.
You can think about anything else.
Yes. If you even feel like eating.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So yeah. Support and community. Anyway, that's really all I wanted to throw in there. I think they're super valuable.
They are. And, you know, there's something I want to touch upon with what you said. So, you know, I've explained about, you know, my wife and Lulu and, that she's a mother and that this impact is so, you know, so much more acute. And her suffering is so much more acute. She basically, you know, especially during the wake of this thing, had no fucks to give when it came to people trying to, with the best intentions, people trying to commiserate in the way that they, best way they knew how, they lost a parent. You know, was the main thing.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this and I'm in her camp 100%, but at the same time, you know, everybody's relative, how do I say this? Not stance, but like their grief is their grief. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if they haven't experienced something to this degree, even though we know, you know, how immense the pain and the suffering is from losing a child, I still want to approach people with kindness when it comes to them trying to, you know, commiserate and talk about, you know, their loss that is not of the same level.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, they absolutely suffered and absolutely either, you know, were or probably continue to be in pain from losing someone as significant as a parent. It's, you know, one of the things that I said in my my hesped, which is the speech that you say at a memorial for Meadow, is that I never envisioned I would be standing here talking about my, you know, my daughter.
Yeah.
I certainly, there's the natural order of things, and then there's this, which is not the natural order of things. So I'm just saying, you know, I think that people's pain it's all legitimate.
Yeah.
You know? It's just, I'm totally with my wife when it comes to this type of situation.
This is actually a really good point, and I think important for people to understand. So, I mean, neurologically, grief is grief, whether you lose a pet or whether you lose a child, right? Grief is grief. And, you know, it triggers things in your brain. And I can't repeat any of them, but I listened to a podcast by Andrew Huberman.
Labs.
And it was all about, you know, what happens neurologically when people go into grief. So while there is a similarity in what grief is, and I'm super cautious not to create a hierarchy of grief. At the same time, I think everybody agrees that, you know, the loss of a child is one of the most devastating things can happen to you, for sure. And I do, because we went through the exact same thing, you know, people, and I understand what their intentions are. Excuse me. The first time somebody said to me, when I lost my mom, blah, 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 I was a little off put by that. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, because my initial reaction was like, you have no idea. Like, you can't even wrap your head around this. And what I had to do, me personally, is I had to understand that they weren't trying to compare the loss of their mother to the loss of my son. They were trying to just find a common ground to be able to bond.
And to make you feel better.
Yes.
And that's exactly how I feel, too.
Yeah.
I feel that way. But it is hard.
Yeah.
Your initial reaction, and it's not like I'm a robot. Like I'm like in my mind going, that's not the same fucking thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah. I mean, I don't blame you. I don't blame my wife. I don't blame your wife, Rochelle. It is entirely different.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be, I always want to be kind and be a human to everybody. And, you know, again, like you said, you know, loss is loss and grief is grief. It's just that there are different levels.
Yeah. It's definitely, in my opinion, it's even when the intention is right, it definitely comes off wrong.
Yeah.
When somebody says, yeah, well, when I lost my, you know, whatever.
Right.
So I get that. And I think the only point that I want to make there is, you know, when it just be careful when you say something like that,
right?
Because it can feel like, you're comparing. When someone, you know, if I come to you and say, yeah, well, you know, when I lost my dog, you know, I was really, really sad.
Okay.
You know, it could feel like
I haven't gotten that one.
No, I haven't either. But but the reality is, it just be careful. And even my buddy I was talking to today, you know, we don't compare, even though we both lost our sons at very young ages, you know, young men ages. It's less about comparing the two or anything like that. It's more about, okay, I feel like maybe you can understand what I'm going through more than
talking about how you're dealing with it after the fact, rather than comparing the actual event of that.
Yeah.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I listened to a couple of your, I think you had like smaller mini podcasts.
Yes.
And you had a story about, you know, what it really illustrated, like at minimum, like what it means to somebody like you or like me for people to show support and in what way. And I can't tell you how many people that have come up to me, the vast majority of them tell me they don't have the words.
Right.
And my response is the same. It's like, you don't need the words.
Yes, exactly.
You're here.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I want to make sure everybody understands is just being, checking in, hanging out, getting coffee, doing things like that is huge.
Yeah.
And they, you know, we don't even have to like address what happened and we don't have to go through that. I've been through that. Like I've talked it out and talked to, you know, and of course if people want to talk about it in a way that is, you know, not getting into certain details, which I'll, you know, keep to myself, of course, but I do talk about it. I have talked about it. I'm not afraid to talk about it. It's not that. It's just when people want to show their support and they don't know how, I'm telling them is that, you know, a hug, a hang, a visit,
yeah,
a call,
yep,
a text, all of that is great.
Yeah.
And I'm extremely grateful. I'm also very grateful that, you know, Lulu's like, and we both have a lot of support, but she's got a lot of support. I mean, she's, you know, a lot of people are checking in on her and they should.
Yeah. Do you find that the support and the check-ins kind of tails off as time goes on?
For me, they have,
yeah.
But I'm, you know, I'm okay. And I'm not, you know, one of the things that I've talked to my therapist about is, you know, she's wanted me to be proactive in reaching out to people, to, you know, do whatever, which I have a hard time doing, to be honest. I really, you know, and I really want people to take in the message that we don't have to, you know, this is not this doesn't have to be a grief session when we get together.
Right.
Like I just want to, you know, and I want to enjoy the life I have, even though I've been so profoundly sad. And I will always be sad, and I will never be more than just okay.
Right.
Never. But that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy the time you have. And I've got two other children that I've got to take care of, and my wife, and you know, and there are endeavors that I'm involved in that, you know, really they drive me. But what also drives me is I absolutely want to help people who are, you know, dealing with this either on one side or the other. I mean, I just feel like I've got to convert this tragedy into something that is more productive and it's going to help people. And that's, you know, I'm not going to start a foundation or anything like that. It's just me.
Yeah.
You know, so I've asked friends and yes, if there's anybody that needs to talk about the issues that they're going through, you know, I'm there.
So when did that switch flip to, you know, I'm focused on myself and healing and, you know, moving forward and all that to, you know what, I want to help other people.
Quicker than I would have thought, but there was a period of time where I was in no position to help
understandably
anybody.
Yes,
I was very keen to talk to people and talk in front of a group of people. It's pretty quickly, and I had, you know, family and friends kind of reel me in a little bit and say, I think you need to slow down, you know, and think about, you know, settling in a little bit with all this. And they were 100% right.
Yeah.
You know, I was in no position to be able to, you know, start helping people. It was really probably, if I think about it, not distraction per se, because I don't engage in avoidance or distraction when it comes to this issue.
Can't
at all. You can't. It will it will bite you.
It's always there, and avoiding it is just
the worst thing you can do.
Yeah. It's just, it's a pressure cooker that's getting more and more pressure in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, on a side note, my son is, you know, 14 and is, you know, he's pretty young and was 13 when this happened. We have a lot of attention on him because I, you know, as much as it seems like he's okay, I worry that at some point is the maturity of him and his brain, everything like that's going to start, you know, really thinking about his losing one of his best friends.
You know, it's interesting. Cause I had never thought about this, and, Connor being a Marine, we got plugged into the whole Gold Star family program, right? And so Rochelle and I sat in on our first family counseling with a group of other Gold Star families. And one of the facilitators had mentioned a program for siblings, right? And started telling the story about the reason they did that is, you know, they were at a function and kids were at a table and she happened to be sitting very close to the kids' table and overheard one of the kids mentioning that, you know, everybody's always asking me how my parents are, but they never ask me how I am. Oh. Yeah. And that was like, I mean, that was an aha moment for sure, mm-hmm. because that's the normal reaction when an adult comes up to the sibling, it's the first thing they ask, hey, how are your parents doing? Right? Because they're friends with the parents, sure. and not friends with the child. It's a really, it's a fine line.
It is. That hasn't been my experience. I don't know what people are asking my kids, generally speaking.
Yeah.
It seems, I understand the, you know, preconceived notion that the parents of the child are going to be the ones that are the most affected. But, you know, everybody who's asked me how I'm doing is has checked in with, you know, how's your wife doing? How's yeah. Eden doing? How's Ezra doing? So
good.
Yeah. I think we're very fortunate. And I say that in all sincerity.
Yeah.
That we're fortunate because of the support and the type of support that we've been getting. People are just not, they're thinking about what they're asking for the most part, really.
Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you experienced this tragedy and in short order, you kind of take the attention off yourself and you move into wanting to be available to help other people based on what you've experienced and learned.
Well, I never will let go of the attention that I have for, I will never abandon or diminish my needs or my family's needs, just to be clear. I feel like I have the capacity to do both. Now, and obviously during the acute period of time of losing Meadow, again, I was in no position to help anybody other than to be right there with my family mm-hmm. and make sure that I, you know, got the help I needed in the manner in which I, you know, described. But I've just been motivated because of the nature of this and of how it's just absolutely horrifying the whole event was and how terrible it is and it still is.
Yeah.
You know, and we're coming up on the year mark. I obviously am paying very close attention to, you know, my wife and family and during getting to this point, not that anything goes away after the year mark. Right.
Yeah.
So, but I have the capacity to be able to, you know, help others when and if they need it. And be able to address the problem, which the problem is unchecked mental health.
Yeah.
And with that goes along the risk of suicide. I have a fundraiser that I've started. And if I didn't have enough on my plate, I'm definitely very driven to make sure that this event is successful in raising money for, you know, two very worthy beneficiaries that I feel address mental health, particularly in teens, but they also address them in musicians. It's Sims Foundation and Out Youth.
Okay.
Austin, they both reflect Meadow. And this event is a shameless plug on...
No, not at all.
August 24th at the Far Out Lounge. And we got, you know, it's basically a concert. And
Are you going to be performing?
No, I will not. No. That's the thing. I was really like, this is not about me. This is about, you know. So I didn't want there to be like nepotism, you know, at all. So I've got really great people performing. I've played in one of the bands that's as a sub that's performing with a headliner. But no, I want this to be focused on one thing, and that is raising money for mental health awareness.
Yep.
So, you know, that's taken my attention, but I am channeling, you know, my desire to help through this event. So that's, you know, kind of where my, efforts have been as of late.
I want to back up to a couple different things. You mentioned that you're coming up on the 1 year mark, and the men's group that I participate in, twice a month, it's all Gold Star fathers, and you know, every single one of them has lost a son that's in my group. Some of them from suicide, some of them from accident, some of them from war. Mm. One of the most common themes from every single person in that group who is further down the road than I am is the second year is harder than the first year. And the first time somebody said that, I was like, there is no fucking way the second year could be harder than the first year. I can't even wrap my head around that. But I have heard it over and over and over again from people who are literally 6, 8, 10 years down the road or more. And they all say the same thing.
Mm.
So
thank you for telling me.
Yeah. And the only reason I bring it up is just because I would have never guessed. Ever.
Neither would have I. I mean, I wouldn't have either. This has been.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been challenging. Does not begin to, you know, describe the situation.
Yep.
The thought of a worse year coming up.
It's mind bending.
It is. And it really just emboldens me, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reaction I've got is that. So I'm certainly not going to sit down and let stuff happen to me, even though it's going to passively. But I'm, you know, plan on being pretty active with respect to.
That's great. Yeah. And look, the only reason I bring it up is just because I think it's important for people to know that are coming up on that, you know. In my mind, I was thinking, oh, man, you know, the first year, if we can just get through the first year. So for what that's worth, that's not coming from me because I'm not a year into this yet. That's coming from other people who have been through it.
Right. You know, I know I've expressed how sorry I am for you and Rochelle. And, you know, because I just, you know, again, I mean, we can... Yeah, we both know they have a very similar bond in that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm, you know, here for you. And it's one of these things where it's great hearing that, you know, from people that really do understand. And it's one of the things that, you know, I appreciate from people who like you and other people who have I've been very close with, you know. So you navigating through this first year, and then what you told me with the second year, which is, you know,
yeah,
scaring.
It is.
I'm just, you know, saying that.
Yep.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I want to ask you, since you're a musician, do you feel like music has helped you in part of your grief journey or coping with the grief or trauma in any way?
I mean, it helps me in every aspect of my life that, you know, before Meadow's death and after, because this is something that's in my blood. I'm not just like, I didn't just pick up a guitar and start noodling around. I come from a musical family. My whole father's side of the family is musical. And it's people who are, you know, have the gene, as I say, they need it in their lives. So it's part of me. I think if I were more of a singer-songwriter type of guy, it would be something that would be the focus of that. I'm not, you know, I've been a bass player and a sideman. I get calls to back people up and things like that, which I enjoy my role, you know.
Right.
It's great for me. And I've written songs before when I was younger, but I think music helps in general. So to be honest, it's like, you know, and it's not just playing music. This is for everybody, you know, listening to music. I've been turned on to a lot of new music lately, and I think it's not a coincidence that I've been gravitating towards, like, you know, new stuff. Meadow had her, like, one of the things that happened before she died is on Spotify, you can share playlists.
Mm, yeah.
And we did a mutual playlist that overlapped our two tastes and also introduced other, you know, there's some value to Spotify.
Yeah.
But it is, it was wonderful having that, you know, to listen to after she died. She turned me on to some music. She was a young musician. She played the drums and, so music is a very important factor in my life, and it always has been. But if the message is clear that, you know, music can be a wonderful thing for anybody, whether they're a musician or whether they're just listening.
Yeah. Yeah. The main reason I ask, I actually just had somebody on the show who her occupation is a music therapist. Mm. And she works with soldiers who have PTSD or traumatic brain injury. And she, you know, talked a lot about the process of how music, how they use music to help people, you know, combat that.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating. I had no idea, but it's a real thing.
Yeah. I've heard it's a real thing. I'm not very clear about what that therapy is, because I feel like I've engaged my own music therapy also to the point of where I have like an earworm syndrome, which is bad. Like I get something stuck in my head and I'm reading about the remedy of this, and the remedy is to listen to something else.
There you go.
And I'm like, okay, yeah. So there's no remedy really.
Yeah. Riley, who the young lady that was on the show, she talked about, the neurological effects that it has. And, you know, of course a lot of it was way over my head, but it was pretty fascinating.
Yeah,
so that's why that was the genesis of that question. What types of things, okay, aside from, you know, being available to help other people and being there for your family and all, what types of things are you doing or have you done to help you navigate this journey?
Is exceedingly important. And you probably already know this, but if I'm not saying this generally, I'm speaking to you too, that you take the time necessary for yourself. And I've gotten rather good at that because, you know, with Ketonic and my other job, I should say that I've worked in my father's company for 25 years doing federal grant compliance and management. And, you know, I learned a skill set thanks to him and that company. And it's obviously, and that company's been wonderful to me. Managing that and trying to grow my own business, mm-hmm. and then, you know, trying to play gigs on the side and have another business that I'm not going to bring up, and, you know, and then my grief, which is a whole other thing and a very all-consuming, encompassing thing, as you know. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got to take time to yourself. The reason why I work all the time, day and night, weekends, which, you know, I'm comfortable doing that, and my family is supportive of that, and I'm not a, you know, my family's also very busy, is because I need time. It can be any time in the morning, afternoon, or evening where I've just got to, like, do me things. Mm-hmm. Spend time in a coffee shop. Walk with a friend. At the gym. I mean, if the gym is, like, absolutely saved my life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to work out 4 to 5 times a week. And it's not just because I'm a maniac. It's because it is absolutely, like, essential for mental clarity, just as much as it is for keeping physically, making sure that I'm up to the task to do anything, mm-hmm. whether it be for my family or, you know, jobs or whatever it is. It's just, it all plays hand in hand with each other, but taking a break from all of it. And it's not like you don't necessarily need to go out on vacation. I love the thought of that. Occasionally I get to do that. But, you know, sometimes I just sit alone, and I'm not sitting alone sad. Sometimes I can be.
Sure.
But I'm just getting a cup of coffee somewhere and sitting somewhere. And I put my phone down and I just sit there and I look at nature. You know, I'm usually outside, even in, and I try to do this early so that I have the opportunity to do that, or I'll talk with a friend or whatever. But, like, having the sufficient alone time to where you're just with your thoughts, or maybe you turn those off and you're able to, you know, to meditate, which is a practice I really, really want to get into. And, you know, it's something that I don't know how many more things I can fit in my life, but, like, I would really, I value people who have that practice, yeah. in their lives. I really do want to get better at that, because being able to sit with yourself without, you know, having all of the thoughts of, like, everything that you're doing and just being, yeah. is something that's very appealing to me.
Yeah. Rochelle meditates, and, I mean, she's had some really profound experiences. I've made a half-hearted attempt at it, but I do, you know, just watching her and listening to some of her experiences, I think there's tremendous value in it. I can't say from personal experience, sure. that I have it, but, and then the physical fitness thing. I just had Tim Kennedy on the show, and you know, one of the things that he mentioned was if you have a strong body, your mind will become stronger, but it's not the reverse. You can't really have a strong mind without a strong body, mm-hmm. right? You know? So I think I'm a huge proponent for physical fitness, and I think there's a lot of benefits, and I think, you know, I can't rattle them all off, but.
Oh, there's too many to count.
But neurologically and emotionally, you know, there is some value in physical fitness. So People have heard me say that before, so I won't pound that drum too much.
I totally corroborate what you're saying.
Okay, so, having some alone time with no distractions, I think that's huge. You know what? And I think, honestly, whether you're going through a grief process or not, that alone time with no distractions is probably valuable
in
no matter what.
Yeah. I sought that out before Meadow's death, out of necessity.
Yeah.
I needed that.
Yeah. That's great stuff, man. I do want to back up onto the fundraiser because I think this is really important, and this is super noble that you're doing this. I really love this, and I got your email, and Rochelle and I, 100%, we're going to do anything we can to support this because, A, because we're friends, but B, because this is, it hits close to home, man.
Sure.
All right, so it's August 24th, and it's going to be a concert fundraiser.
Correct. It's at the Far Out Lounge.
Far Out Lounge. Where is that?
That's off of South Congress. I don't have the address in front of me, but it's fairly well south, and it's a great venue.
Okay.
It's a 3,600 person venue in which.
Okay.
Well, I've got a challenge ahead of me to try to get that filled, and I want to raise as much money as possible. So that's, I'm going to do my best to get the word out. I've got someone who's been great helping me. So she's helping me with coordination. The band lineup is fantastic. I can name them. I don't know when this is going to be coming out, if it's going to be before the event.
It'll be before the event for sure.
So there's Grupo Fantasma, who I've Grupo Fantasma, Nemagata, Superfonicos, The Point, School of Rock are going to have their students playing, which is a great opportunity for these kids to play on the same stage as these bands. Because Grupo Fantasma, they've won, Grammys, and they've toured all over the world.
Wow.
And they were Prince's backing band for a while. So, they're, great.
And, that's legit.
Well, they're Beto Martinez, the guitar player, and Grupo, they're the reason why I was able to do this, because they agreed to do it very early on.
Wow.
And they're incredible. So, and we're also some form of Shiny Ribs from Kevin Russell is going to be playing. And we've got another act that's TBD. So great lineup, great venue.
Do you have a time, a start time for that yet?
Doors are 6:30. Start music is 7.
Okay.
And it'll go to midnight.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll make sure, once again, we're here to support you. Anything we can do to help get the word out.
Thank you.
I'm glad to see that you have you've added event coordinator to your resume, because you need some extra stuff to do.
Oh, yeah. There's no way I could do that alone, because I started to, and I'm like, this is just nuts.
That's so huge.
I needed the help. It goes to... when you need help, you should definitely seek it out.
Fair enough.
I did.
Yeah, and you went. You're not starting small, man. Filling up 3,600 seats. That is.
Good luck to me.
No small task. You know what? If anybody can do it, you can do it, Greg.
Thank you.
I'm very confident in that. Okay. Look. I think there's a couple takeaways that I've got. One is, community. Super important, right? And I couldn't concur more from my own personal experience. Taking me time with no distractions, I think there's tremendous value in that. Mm-hmm. And I do that myself. I think I can do better at it, and I'm going to make that a point.
Yeah.
Physical fitness, once again, I've said this multiple times in multiple episodes. There is no one silver bullet that helps, alleviate this pain that people experience from traumatic incidents like this. They never go away. However, if you find several things that you can plug into your life, it can definitely help. I think those are some big ones. And then, do you have a name for the event that's coming up?
Meadow Fest.
Meadow Fest. Perfect. All right. And then Meadowfest, August 24th at the Far Out Lounge from 6:30 to midnight. You count on me being there, man. I can't wait. Great. Yeah. Greg, great. Man, I know I said this when we first got together. I'm incredibly sorry, you know, for your loss, for your family's loss. And, you know, just like you told me, I'm here for you, you know, anytime
I know you
need
are.
Me.
And, yeah. And I'm sorry, of course, as well, because, you know, I mean, this is, we know how this, we know how each other feels.
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, I am there for you always.
I'm so glad that you randomly reached out. I mean, once again, you know, there's something cosmic
what
there,
do we,
man. I don't remember what, I think it was, I think you wanted to experiment or talk about potentially if we had canning capacity or
maybe.
Something like that. I think that's what it was. I don't know, but we obviously completely, that was a very short-lived
right.
reason for us to get together.
Right.
We had bigger and better things to get to.
Absolutely.
For sure. Man, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll talk again soon.
All right. Looking forward to that.
Amen.